Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi folks, welcome back to the Grand Isle History Pod on Celtic Fanzine TV and on audio on the Celtic Soul Podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button and feel free to leave a comment if you like what you hear or if you don't like what you hear. We welcome all comments as long as they're not rude, racist or sectarian. And once again, folks, please, please, please hit the subscribe and follow button if you're listening on the audio on Celtic Soul Podcast. And that's available across all platforms, Spotify, Acast, Apple, whatever your preferred platform is, please give us a follow. And all the podcasts and our video content is still available on CelticFanzine.com. And I'm joined this week on the Grand Isle History Pod by writer and teacher Paddy McMenamin. Paddy penned a long read for the latest issue of More Than 90 Minutes, issue 117, which comes out later in the week. And his piece was on Celtic in Europe. And that's why I've asked you, Paddy, along to the Grand Isle History, because you have a good history yourself following Celtic in Europe. You know a lot about Celtic in Europe. And I suppose ahead of Thursday's game against Bayer Leverkusen, which I know you'll be attending, and a welcome return for you to paradise. So, Paddy, let's just kick off with how you kicked off the article in the latest More Than 90 Minutes. The first paragraph, you kick off with Ajax at home in Martin O'Neill's first big season in Europe after we'd done the treble. Now, back then, we had top managers and top players coming up from the English Premiership to Scotland. Not so much now, Paddy, but some magnificent adventures under Martin O'Neill, with the likes of Larsson, Thompson, Hartson and Sutton scoring some wonderful goals. So take us back to that time, Paddy.
Hi, Andy. The 2001, I suppose, we went through two decades. Since we played Real Madrid in the quarterfinal in 1980 and went out in Ireland 3-2, the next 20 years were desperate, and it was first round exits more or less every year, just when I thought about penning the article, you were talking about it was your 20th anniversary of the fanzine, and it brought us back to 2001. And Martin O'Neill had arrived, and we'd got a league title and qualified, or on the verge of qualifying for the Champions League now, which was the Holy Grail. We'd watched for 10 years, and the Champions League music coming on, and Zadok the Priest, and watching, unfortunately, watching, the best of Europe, the good and the great, and we weren't part of it, and then we went to AX that night, and I'm watching on TV, thinking maybe this is going to, you know, we probably won't get through this, but Bobby Petta, he played the game of his life, you know, and we romped home 3-1, and you know, it looked, you know, he just felt, God, we're in the Champions League, but, you know, what Celtic are like. And we come back to the home game, and I was still living in Donegal at the time, and me and a friend, we went over on the mad supporters bus, you know, leaving at 4 a.m. from Letterkenny, and I think there might have been 7 buses travelling at that time. Like, it was incredible. And you're riding in Glasgow at lunchtime and spending the day, and then into the match. And you just felt, you know, this is it. You know, we maybe beat them 2-0 at home, but of course, you know, being Celtic, you know, and they tore up the script, and AX scored after 10 minutes, and we spent the next 80 minutes. And I don't bite my fingernails, but I was tempted that night, and I was up on the top of the north stand, and nerve wracking. You know, if I had a score in, God knows what would have happened in that. But as we get into the last 10 minutes, I just, you know, you just felt this surge of energy around the stadium, and it was a bit like the stopping the 10 in a row, and the north stand was rocking, and it was just a crescendo of noise as we played out the few minutes, and the whistle went, and we realized we're in the Champions League for the first time, you know. And it was just, it was an amazing experience, you know, to actually, that we'd made it into the, this was only getting into the group stages, but I mean, it was Celtic's first time, you know, and it was just brilliant.
Yeah, and it was the chance, Paddy, of, you know, 3 big nights in Celtic Park with the elite of Europe, and also 3 opportunities for the fans to get into Europe and enjoy themselves abroad. But I was at the Betis game, Paddy, a couple of weeks ago, and back in Seville for the first time since 2003, which was probably, I suppose, the pinnacle of Europe under Martin O'Neill. My wildest dreams during the 90s, I never thought we'd see Celtic in the European final, but the locals, you get into a taxi with a Celtic top on, your T-shirt with the crest on, the locals are talking Celtic. You know, even if their English is poor, you go to bars, Celtic to Glasgow. They haven't forgotten about us. And even younger ones, I was talking to a young fan, perfect English, and she was saying that, you know, it's the stuff of legend when Celtic came to Seville. Now it ended in heartbreak, but yeah, what a magnificent journey that season as well, as that first season in the Champions League. Because in the Champions League that year as well, of course, we had a visit to Valencia, and that fabulous old stadium, crumbling old stadium. So, yeah, under O'Neill, it was just an amazing journey, Paddy. And I think back as well to going to the old Olympic Stadium in Munich, and losing through a goalkeeping error. I think it was Magnus Hedman after Thompson had scored. So, yeah, there's been so many wonderful, wonderful occasions in Europe. But Seville was probably the one that we remember fondly for the build-up, and probably for the heartbreak, because I've never watched a game back.
Yeah, I have it in an old VHS somewhere, but Seville was the pinnacle, you know. For whatever reason, I didn't get over to Blackburn or the Liverpool game, but after they beat Liverpool, or maybe before it, maybe after, we were over at Stuttgart, and I just took a notion that they might get to the final and tried for tickets. And if you remember, there was a UEFA did a ballot, was it that year, or first come first? I can't remember. But you could go, you went on early to apply for them. And I was at work, and got my boss, and I gave him email or whatever, and he tried all day from it, and me and him were fairly friendly, and he came out and he says, that must be the wrong web address or whatever. And it turned out that because so many Celtic fans were looking for tickets, the website crashed. And it opened up again at 6 a.m. the next morning, and I know a guy up in Donegal, he was a Liverpool guy, and he got tickets the next morning. There was a chance of getting tickets, but I missed them. And we went there with no tickets and spent the week in the Algarve with my grandson and Mary, and drove up to Seville, and sure, it was an amazing experience, you know. And despite the result, we had our car parked at the stadium, and Mary, you know, there was a few imperatives, you know. So she says, "We're just sleep in the car, you know, you can't drive," and she was tired. And so we were sitting in the car, and I just said, I'm going to stroll over to the stadium. And I mean, I never would wear a top, you know, I just don't, you know. But I did that night, one of the old white tops. I just strolled in through a door, and I kept walking, and ended up in this lounge, bar, whatever. And there at the bar was Jack McGinn and Brian Wilson, the MP, and the barman says to me, you like a drink? And he gave me a Prosecco or something. There was a manager came along, and I think she said, like, to me, what are you doing in here? It was where all the officials, all the top UEFA guys had their dinner before the match. But and the Prosecco was flowing, and they were taking down a big poster, a big 6-foot poster off the final. And Brian Wilson says, what are you doing? She says, I'm done. She gave him one and she gave me the other one, which I have somewhere, you know. It was a nice memento, you know. But
so when we were flooding out of the stadium, you were going in.
I've never done anything like it in my life, you know. And I just strolled about, you know. And again, the barman was great, and an older barman, and he brought me around, and he gave me a bag of stuff like programs and the president's address at the dinner and a load of stuff. And he filled a bag of stuff for me, and I pulled off the top as I was leaving, and I said, "Are you a young boy?" And I said, "Give him the top." And as I was walking around, a guy came along in a golf buggy, and it turned out he was a Dutch TV guy, and he said, "Jump in, I'll give you." And he drove me over to the car. You know, it was amazing. And with a few hours sleep, and drove down to Algarve in the morning. You know,
yeah, there was so many wonderful memories of that O'Neill era in Europe. Even though there was nothing won, Liverpool away was a fantastic result.
Liverpool, I mean, was one of the best nights ever. And I organised, you know what it's like in Ireland, and you know they're all full of the nonsense about the English Premier. So it would maybe have been everybody would like Celtic, but they'd all support Man United and Liverpool and all that nonsense. So there were 6 Liverpool guys and me and another Celtic guy, and we arranged to go to a pub in Letterkenny to watch the match, and with a wee bet on and all, you know. And of course they were expecting this was going to be easy, and of course big hearts, and you know, I'm sure it blew the roof of the place, you know. And you can imagine, you know, I just didn't talk for a while, but it was good fun, you know.
Yeah, Paddy, I was lucky enough to be in the stadium that night in the centenary stand with the Liverpool fans. And when the final whistle went, I wasn't alone. There was a lot of Celtic fans. There was a lot of Celtic fans in. And I always remember Gerry Brady getting put out of the when we scored. He jumped up, and Gerry's from Nave Park, lives in Scotland now, a very famous Celtic fan from Dublin. And they were putting Gerry out, and I just said to Gerry, "Don't even look at me. Don't even look at me when you get, because I was sitting quiet."
I know.
So yeah, it was And I know someone got chinned, a Celtic fan got chinned. I seen him with the black eye later. He was in the cop right. And he jumped up and he ended up getting chinned. But I held me, I kept myself quiet till the final whistle. But like under O'Neill, we thought anything was possible in Europe because I was also there the night in the Nou Camp when we knocked the great Barcelona out of Europe. And we thought, you know, maybe we were going to a final. But we came up against Villarreal in the next round and I suppose that was it. But even further on then, you know, there has been, you know, so many great nights. I suppose the one in Celtic Park on the 125th anniversary when the Green Brigade done the display, which the club were happy to use in pictures, even though they didn't give them credit for it. But that was a special night and probably, you know, a memory that will stay fresh in everyone's mind.
Again, I didn't get over that night. I was actually up in Donegal with my daughter, me and my grandkids watched it. I think I was doing final exams or something and the masters or something. I went back to college but funny enough, my grandson Oisin, who we lost in later years, he lost interest in football. And yet every photo you see of him when he was a kid, you know, he's got a Celtic top on. But my granddaughter, who was only, what age was she? 12, yeah. And so when we scored the two goals, of course, I let her roar out of me, you know. And ever since that, I think, she's the only one of them. And every time you see her, she's in Sligo 18 now. She'll have a Celtic top on, you know, she's 20 now, you know. But it's sort of converted her, you know. And just going back a second to Villarreal, I was over at the home game. And again, like the previous year, well, this year you actually felt super confident that we would get to the final after beating Barcelona. And but this year UEFA had a different, I think it was first come, first served. I know the 2 years was a different method of distributing the tickets. And I popped off the email and didn't I get two tickets for Gothenburg for the final? And confident that we'd get to the final, and of course we didn't. And I think Newcastle were in the semi-final, and I contacted a radio station in Tyneside and told them, you know, there was two tickets if they wanted to raffle them or something, you know. And but it ended up they still have the tickets somewhere in a box, you know. But and alas, no more finals since, you know.
No, but Paddy, you've been, I suppose the article is an excellent article because it's wrote from a personal point of view, but you also delve in to the history of Celtic in Europe before you started to go to see Celtic in Europe. So can you just take us back and give the listeners and the viewers maybe a little insight into those early years when Celtic, when European competition started and Celtic started their journey.
It was about, I mean, I didn't go over until Benfica in November 69. So, I mean, Celtic made their first, dipped their feet into Europe in 64. So it was 5 years earlier. And they played Valencia, apparently, in the first game, lost 6-4 in aggregate. And the following year, or 63, so yeah, and then 64, they got to the semi-final. Amazingly, because, I mean, it was, you know, we were in terrible shape at the time and they lost 3-0 to the cup final, obviously, and, you know, and they played MTK Budapest in the semi-final, won 3-0 at Parkhead, and, you know, you would take it for granted they were in the final, and of course, like going to Real Betis last week or so, they went away and lost, shipped 4 goals and were out, you know. They were dipping their feet. They were when they won the cup in 65, which started the whole Jock Stein thing, and the following year, they got to the semi-final again against Liverpool. And I'm sure everybody, you know, has seen these clips. A disallowed goal in the last minute, which would have equalised and put us through. That knocked us out, you know, a perfectly legit goal from Lennox. And it caused a bit of, and, you know, thankfully over the years, there's never been much aggro from the Celtic end anywhere to go in Europe, you know, a bit like the Irish fans. But because that, when that goal was disallowed, there was problems at Anfield that night, you know, but never really repeated, you know. I don't need to tell anybody, of course, then in 67, I mean, it's ingrained in all our minds, you know, and I mean, the run to the final, you know, whatever materialized, you know, where it's fate or whether you believe in the magic of Jock Stein or it was our time, whatever, but going to the final, you know, probably could have lost in the quarter final with Ovechina. Won the first leg of the semi-final against CSKA, easy enough. And then a 0-0 deposit, and of course winning in Lisbon, which needs no, doesn't need me to tell any age of Celtic fan, you know. I mean, it was fantastic. I still hadn't evolved into a real Celtic supporter at that stage, I suppose, you know. Like I've told you before, and in Belfast, and we'd spent a few years, you know, a friend bringing us over to Glentoran, which is interesting, you know. So we really hadn't, and it was only then meeting cousins from Clydebank and Donegal, and their dads and my uncles, and they were telling me about, you know, obviously we knew about Celtic, and we actually marched down the falls with tricolours. There was a massive parade after the one, and the famous Gerry Fitt, you know, Gerry Fitt is a Brit, you know, he was up speaking, you know, and he's clenched fist and he says, "We done it," you know, playing to the audience, you know. But they were telling me about, you know, and I just started to get the interest then, maybe in 68 after Lisbon. And then, you know, we went to Dublin to see against Rovers in early 69, and then Benfica that November, you know. I mean, my first year, I have no doubt I can say that it was my best year ever in 50 years as a Celtic supporter, except the finale. But, I mean, I went over against Benfica, 75,000. It was only in 2 minutes. Gamble scored from 30 yards. Willie Wallace and then Harry Hood made it 3-0. We thought we were through. Out in Lisbon, we'd know it wasn't on TV. You know, we didn't know the result to the morning, but famously, they could beat 3-0, and the ref tossed the coin twice, and it hit his boot and rolled along and landed on heads that Caesar had called, and they were through. And the next game in March, the quarter final against Fiorentina, and I went over and an uncle brought me in, and again 3-0, you know. And I mean, you know, we weren't feared of anybody, you know. It was incredible. And then, I mean, the best night of my life, like at Hampden against Leeds in the 136,500. And I just knew that night. I was only 15, but I knew, I didn't think, no matter what football game I ever went to. Now, watching Donegal win in Croke Park is nearly up there with anything, you know, that night at Hampden and Bremner, we were behind the nets where Bremner scored, and then the second half and Big Yogi and Bobby Murdoch, my favourite, you know, and I mean, the stadium was just, 136,000. I mean, it was just unbelievable, you know. It was just a crescendo of noise coming down the terraces and typically, like, I suppose they do in Ireland, the same as they do in Scotland and England. you know, there are these notions, you know, we'd never heard of Feyenoord, so we probably thought they were no good. And, you know, that's the way, that seems a bit of nature. It's like when the Republic play games against somebody and they think, oh, this is easy, and they get a draw, they don't realise. And Feyenoord were good. And we were just unlucky. We held out to the last couple of minutes. You know, if it had went to replay, we couldn't have played as bad again and would probably have won. But Feyenoord won, you know. And I actually went to see them after the Ibrox disaster. I went over to Hampden and Celtic played Feyenoord in a match. And it was the first time we'd seen what came to be known as total football, you know. And I remember watching Van Hannigan and throwing the ball up. You know, I mean, we're used to the John Fallon or whoever, Simpson, booting the ball up the field. They were throwing it to the right back and pushing it over to the left back. And it was just beautiful football, you know. In 71, we got to the quarterfinal again against Ajax. Again, they took over the mantle from Feyenoord. The Dutch teams won four in a row. And I tried myself and Mickey Kearney, who unfortunately was shot dead during the conflict. We thumbed a lift down. We hadn't much money. We thumbed a lift down to Larne. And we're in the back of a lorry. So we got down anyway. And weren't the boats cancelled? So we couldn't get over, you know. And but they won 1-0, but they lost. They were beat, well enough beat out in Amsterdam, as everybody was. It was no disgrace for the next 3 years, you know.
Paddy, I know from speaking to you before and from all you write about for the fanzine, you have a love of football, not just Celtic. You have a love of football, and the way you described the Dutch game there, it was just beautiful. I've an image in my head now of you watching this as a young man. But the 70s took travel away from you, Paddy. You got involved in the conflict in the six counties, and you were imprisoned in Longcash. So were you still able to, you know, maybe listen to a game on the radio, or were you getting your results and, you know, write-ups and that through the mainstream media? Because obviously, that was a part before, that was early, we'll say, in the conflict in the north. So had you got, even as a prisoner, had you got access to, you know, get that little fix of Celtic, even though you weren't able to go?
I was interned, you know, in 72 when they got to the semi-final against Inter, you know, and Inter took revenge. And Dixie Deans blasted the ball over the roof of the Celtic end, you know, and the poor guy scored 93 goals for Celtic, and he always said nobody ever remembered anything, only the bloody penalty he missed, you know. But we watched it, and we watched it in the cages. One of the few games, you know what it's like in Ireland, or the way it was in Ireland back in the 70s and 80s, the only thing you seen was English football. And it was just because it was a European semi, they showed the Celtic game. You wouldn't see any Celtic games at home. Or on the radio, my wee mate who's dead, my wee Pat McGrattan, who was from Partick, he used to be able to pick up Radio Clyde, I think, on his car radio. You'd see him on a Saturday afternoon, and he'd be sitting out in the freezing cold with his cup of coffee in the car, and he'd be listening on Radio Clyde. But, you know, them years, there was just absolutely no coverage. We were back in the cages in 74 when we got to the semi-final for the final time in Atletico Madrid, and the fiasco that was. They finished with 8 years and had the other 3 sent off and the other 8 booked, I think. And a battle in the tunnel, and quiet man like Davy Hay apparently punched the head of one of the Madrid players, you know, going up the tunnel. But we lost, and that was really the end of our great period in Europe, you know. The 75, I think the last of the nine in a row, I recall just on the radio in the cages, and they're giving a wee bit of the radio, but it was all English football, but I remember them talking about, I think it was at Easter Road, it was one, I'm not sure. You know, them years then, you know, they were just, you know, from 75 to 80, you know, we played a mishmash of teams, you know, that, you know, wouldn't rock the boat anywhere, but we were gone, you know. And just in 1980, I'd left the cages days behind, thank God, you know. And I was to go to the Real Madrid game again. I'm not sure. I was a bit nervous still about going back north, you know. I was in Donegal, I remember going out. My uncle's at a wee pub, and I going out after football training or something. And my aunt was over. She lived in the Isle of Bute, and she wouldn't know much of football, but you know, she says they did it, and the result that came through, they beat Madrid 2-0, you know, which was probably the last. It really was the last hurrah, you know. It was, you know, I mean, there was, I think, 120,000, 80,000 at Parkhead, and I think 120,000 in the Bernabeu, and, you know, and it was the last hurrah, really, in Europe, you know. I mean, the rest of the 80s, God, it was so disheartening. I mean, it went, it was a few leagues, a few cups, 85, the centenary. But every year in Europe, you were getting beat by a team, like really top-class teams, like I can't even pronounce their names, Temesura or something. Sounds like a dessert, you know, in a posh restaurant. Wisla Krakow, was it? Zeku, I can't even remember. I have the name somewhere there, but you know, every year there was a few great. The first game I went back to was Real Sociedad in 82, and they went over with two friends, who are both dead now, Tony and Pat. And after the match, Tony brought us to our first Indian restaurant down in the Argyle Street or somewhere. And we never had an Indian in our life, so he had lived in Glasgow a while, and he ordered anyway, and this thing came out anyway, looked like something the dog left. It wasn't. I mean, I love Indian food now, but that was our first. That's my memory of after getting beat by Sociedad was the Indian meal, and then we played you. We had some results. We always could get one result. You know, we played Juve, Liam Brady. I mean, the crowd adored Liam Brady when he was the Celtic crowd, you know, when he was playing, took a bow when he was playing for Juve. And we beat them 1-0 at home, but of course they beat us away. And one of the unfortunate nights, the Notts Forest game. And I mean, we played them off the field in the city ground and should have beat them 3-0. And I remember Cluffy and all coming out, the crowd, the Celtic end was mobbed, you know, twice as many as it should have been, and came onto the pitch. The TV people thought it was trouble at first, then they got word it wasn't, it was just overcrowding. Cluffy came round, and I remember the TV guy saying he's not wearing the most appropriate dress. Cluffy had a green top on him, you know, and he came over to the crowd, and the crowd, you know, sorry, there was no trouble or anything, but I mean, we went back to Glasgow, and again, the way, the Celtic way, you know, Forrest played them, beat them 2-1 easy in Glasgow, you know.
Yeah, I remember, that's probably my first memory, Paddy. Paddy, that's probably my first memory of watching Celtic. Is that Forest game?
Not Forest.
It was on. People will remember a great program on a Wednesday night on the BBC. It was called Sports Night, and they used to have boxing and football, and that would have been probably my earliest memory of watching Celtic, because it would be a couple of years before I would go to see them.
I still have that in a WHO. Obviously, I haven't got a video period, but they're there somewhere. But it was a brilliant performance in the City Ground, you know. And I'm not sure it was Martin O'Neill playing. He might have been gone at that stage. That was about 84, I think, was it? But it was results like that. Like, you know, the first leg, the Juve game, Rapid Vienna, the disaster that was, and, you know, came back and fairly beat them 3-0. But, you know, some arseholes, you know, threw a bottle on and your man lay down. He was yards away from it, but they appealed. I remember I couldn't believe it when they were to go to Old Trafford to play a third game and we didn't turn up, you know, and the supporters turned up in there, and Jesus, maybe 40,000. It was incredible, but the team didn't turn up, you know. You know, where are we? 85, 6? Trying to think. You know, there wasn't, coming into the centenary year, there wasn't much to celebrate, you know, and we had that fantastic year, you know, but not much in Europe. I'm just trying to, if I can, I'm just, sorry, I just have so many notes here, but just before, some of them famous teams that I was saying that we could beat every year, it's embarrassing to even mention. Olympiacos, Wiltsa Krakow, SD Zicker, Innsbruck, Timisoara, Neuchâtel, you know, Zurich, Bordeaux, all right, you know, Croatia, Zagreb, Hamburg, you know, Rapid Vienna were decent enough teams, you know. But I can't remember Centini following year, maybe Borussia Dortmund, you might remember, I'm not sure. But I mean, we weren't going nowhere, you know, and then, you know, it was just so, I mean, honestly, when I was younger, after getting beat in Europe, it took me about 3 days to get over it, you know.
I can hear the frustration, not frustration, maybe sadness in your voice about, you know, those barren years.
But it was just every, I mean, this is September. Like this, Jesus, this is September or October. And you're gone out of Europe in the first round or the second round, maybe. And that's it to the following year. And this was every year. And I mean, I just remember for a few days afterwards, I thought, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah,
you know?
Paddy, and I know how much you love European football, because you had that baptism of success, I suppose, when you started to go in the late 60s. But, you know, Celtic's European history is good. There's been barren years. But the gap now has never been as big in Europe between the top European teams playing in the top leagues, many of them backed by billions and billions of pounds, and some backed by royal families from, you know, the riches of the Middle East. So, like, we don't really, although we dream, you know, of being back in the European final, nothing is impossible, and we should dream, and we should be wanting our team to get to the final. But with the financial difference now, it's like they talk about a Super League. They have a Super League because these teams are super rich, and no one can compete with them. So, you know, there will be, I think Porto was the last team to win the European Cup that you could say were not part of that elite group or not part of them elite leagues. But Paddy, I don't see much hope for any of us outside these clubs.
It's unfortunate, you know, but it's probably reality. I'm not sure. I mean, we had 8 seasons in the Champions League from 2001. Last 16 under Gord Streck. Neil Lennon, who we get a love, and for everything he went through, and I think the abuse he got from so-called Celtic fans was ridiculous. I mean, whatever we think about Neil Lennon, we never could beat 7-0 by Barcelona the way Brendan Rodgers did, or 12-1 by Paris Saint-Germain like Brendan Rodgers did, as a top-class coach who could be the next
that's
man.
That's over two games.
Yeah, over two games, but I mean, it's lucky we were in the group stages because it wasn't counted like that. But to lose 12 goals, I mean, whereas Neil Lennon could beat Barcelona on our 125th. I mean, whatever happened, I mean, how we went, we were able to compete. We were always going to be group stages and maybe the last 16. I would be perfectly, at the moment, it would be a dream. But I mean, if you're winning leagues and played in the group stages every year, and like Porto, who have more or less a business plan, very like we have, and they buy the players for $500,000 from Latin America and they sell them to every club in Europe, top club nearly as an ex-Porto player, and they bring in the 20 men. We have more or less the same business plan, but Porto will get into the group stages every year without doubt, and probably the last 16. Whatever happened to us in the years after, the mid-2015 or whatever, I personally, you can't put it down to one match, but you remember the night we played Juve at home, and I never criticise any players because nobody ever goes out to play bad, but we were expecting to beat Juve, and in the very first minute, Effie Ambrose let a ball go over his head or something, and they scored, and they beat us 3-0. And I don't think we've had a result in Europe since. I see a trajectory from that day on, that we went from being a regular Champions League team, and we might as well be honest and say now we're a league team. I think that's the reality, But whatever happened in them 5 years, I had an interesting discussion with Danny, a big friend of mine, Muller from Donegal, and he did a bit of work in the finance sector in London in the 80s and stuff, and he's very interested and very tuned in about what's happening with the Celtic board and the money situation and stuff, we had an interesting talk there recently, and he's not convinced that, Dermot Desmond has money to compete with anybody, but I know myself, he's not going to spend it in the Scottish League. It's just, it's a non-runner, but Danny was of the opinion that the board were happy enough picking up league titles and odd cup, that they didn't think the ambition was there to make us a Champions League team again,
No, the ambition is certainly not there, because we've seen the way the club has been run since probably Brendan Rodgers done his midnight flip. We've definitely been on a downward spiral, and probably our success papered over the cracks, maybe, and when it's now, the club is now in a bit of a mess, Paddy. But anyway, Paddy, I'm not gonna hawk on about, because we've done a podcast with Matt McGlone about the current woes at the club season.
Yeah.
But yeah. You just brought back some memories now when you mentioned some of the striking years, because the Nakamura free kick against Man United will live long in my memory. And indeed, a performance by a young Darren O'Dea in the San Siro, when it took Kaká extra time to break our hearts. So I do believe that Gordon Strachan was able to punch above his weight with that team he had.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, I was over that net as well. I was ensconced in the top of that north stand. I mean, on the days before I had some health problems, there's no way I could get up, climb up them steps anymore. But I mean, when Nakamura scored, I mean, it was probably, and you know, could compare it to the night of the Leeds game. I mean, it was just, you know, not been xenophobic or anything, you know, but I mean, you know, beating some of the English elite, you know, there's something nice about it, you know, and it gives you that extra, I remember walking down the gallery gate, and I think it was raining, and cars passing, people walking, and everybody was singing So Japanesey, you know, I can remember, you know, and we went up to the Thistle Hotel, and I think the whole of Donegal was there. And I remember, like, you know, just everybody was there. And Jimmy McDade, the TD government minister, was there, and Martin McHugh won the All-Ireland with Donegal. Everybody was there, seemed to be there that night, you know, and like there was a party to the morning, you know, it was one of them great nights, you know.
Yeah, we qualified with a game in hand, and I remember myself and a friend of mine, Brian Cunningham, we went to Copenhagen thinking we were going to get a famous away win, but we didn't.
And it was a great, I mean, how we went, it was a great display. I mean, did Kaká score, was it in the last couple of minutes of extra time or something?
In Milan? Yes, he did.
I mean, how we could go from them displays. I mean, the only, like, I haven't been to many away games in Europe, you know, but I was at Seville, albeit just the up the stairs afterwards. But I mean, I've been in the Camp Nou three or four times. I've been in the San Siro, like they're two, like paradise, they're two shrines to football. And how we could go, I mean, now this is only my own personal opinion. I blame Brendan Rodgers, not the board, because we never got defeats in our European history like we did under Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, Brendan has a philosophy in football, and we can talk about that, Paddy. But at the same time,
but I mean, we can't compete, Paddy.
I'm going to have to stop you there, right? Because, like, you can't compare the team. The teams now, like the Brendan Rodgers, like, he had a philosophy in football, Paddy, right? And he believed in that, right? And it wasn't successful, right? But you know, you can't say that domestically Brendan Rodgers wasn't a good manager. Brendan Rodgers brought professionalism to the club.
Although
I was in Paris that night, and for 8 minutes we were the best team in Europe when Dembele scored. But after that, then it was the other 82 minutes that we fell apart.
But I mean, you know, you'd nearly think, I'm expecting him to get out of the job at the Camp Nou or at Old Trafford, you know. I mean, he's that level of a manager. But I mean, to realise there's a certain way, and Neil Lennon knew how to play like that, Martin O'Neill how to play like that, Jim McGuinness knew how to play like that for Donegal, who were used to getting beat for 20 years until he came along. There's a certain way you play against the good teams, and it's not, you don't go out going
kamikaze.
You don't do that. And I mean, to get beat, and then results, and then, I know we don't have the same caliber of players now, that the level of player has dropped. And but we, you know, I believe since then, and we just became a Europa League team, you know.
But even looking at the teams in the Europa League, like, you know, Bayern Leverkusen are second in the Bundesliga.
Sure,
I know it's only out of six games, but you know, you're going to be up against any of the elite leagues are going to have bigger squads, better players, more money. So, you know, you need a bit of luck, and you need...
Honestly, Andy, there's... I know, you know, everything you're saying is right, but I mean, we'll need to be very careful that we end up that we're not even a Europa League team. That we end up in this other Mickey Mouse competition they've brought out, the I forget the name of it. There's a third European tournament. And we could very easily, the way we're going, we could end up, it's probably an unfair analogy. I'm just after seeing a friend send the points scored or were they finished under par at the Ryder Cup. And I give the list of European...
Oh, not just golf again, Paddy. I'm sick listening to you about golf.
Bear with me a second. I'd give the list of players, the 12 players. And they all finished, Lowry was 6 under. This is their total score. 6 under, and Rahm was 10 under. You know who finished at the bottom? It's not a scientific thing, but it's...
I'm confused now where this conversation is going, Paddy.
Well, Rory finished 2 under, the worst score. Like, Rory's score to me is comparing it to 7-0 against Barca and PSG. There's a way to play. The way to play that Shane Lowry played, not the way Rory played, even though he's a genius.
Right, Paddy, I'm going to leave you there with the golf, because I've no interest in golf. I've no interest in the Ryder Cup. It's a waste of a good walk. I get invited to all these golf days out, and I never go because I've never held a golf stick in my life. Paddy.
Dermot Desmond's a big golfer,
Oh, my God, Paddy. I'm going to start using foul language now, and you shouldn't even have your phone on because it's interfering with the interview. But I'll not hold that against you the next time I get you into the studio. But, Paddy, while I have you, you've wrote a book about your life. Can you tell us when we can expect to read the book? Because it seems to be that COVID has kind of knocked the book back to publishing day. So have we a publishing date? Have we a date that we can, go and buy this book or maybe get you into the studio to chat about it? Then maybe you'll switch your phone off and people won't be texting you about bloody golf.
We're having a launch in the Felons Club in Belfast. We're having a launch in Letterkenny and then down at my home place in Termin. And then... launch in Charlie Burns as the main bookshop in Galway and at the college, and a launch over in the left wing bookshop in the Calton, and maybe at one of your Celtic AM.
Hopefully,
mornings.
Paddy. Hopefully, yeah, we'll get you in for a chat.
The book's, it's titled Armed Struggle to Academia, it's from life in the 70s and conflict in Belfast and the years in the cages. It's about a lot of friends up to 40 that were killed over the peace. A lot of friends who have died in recent years. And then, moving on and taking redundancy, going back to university in Galway and ending up a teacher man. And, it's a story. It's a story of life, It's also as much my story. It's as much lots of people who I grew up and some survived and some didn't, and it's their story, and it's a story, I think, that needs to be told, and it's for them as much as myself putting it together, It's life.
Yeah, Paddy, I'm looking forward to reading it. Thanks very much for chatting to me today. Hopefully I'll see you in Glasgow on Thursday. For another European match and hopefully a famous victory. It's going to be a tough one where the squad is very thin bare, a lot of injuries, maybe, and no not so much quality to come in when a player does get injured, which is disappointing for Ange and disappointing for us as fans. But Paddy, listen, as I said, thanks very much for joining us. And folks, thanks for watching and listening. And if you would like to hear more about Paddy's story, he was a guest on the Celtic Soul podcast back in episode 20 and 21. And that's available on our podcast platforms and also on Celtic Fanzine TV. And Celtic, no, sorry, it's not available on Celtic Fanzine TV. It's available on CelticFanzine.com. So, Paddy, just a final word to you.
Yeah, just I might see you about the Merchant City, maybe around five. And if you wanted to earlier, we're heading down to St Andrews for 18 holes if you're interested.
Paddy, there's as much chance of me spending a day in a golf course as there is in an orange lodge. And I'll leave that final word to me then. Good luck, Paddy. Thanks very much.
Slán. Thanks.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.